We have some quiet, please. Walk silently. Speak in signs. We'll call the House Special Session Committee on Budget Restoration to order. Today's date is September 12th. We have a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4076. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4076 amended. You might want to report to staff as to what this bill entails before people testify.
Mr. Chair, you have the House Bill 4076, the A13 amendment, and you should also have the A and Growth House Bill 4076 before you. And what the bill does, or what the amendments do, is change the rate adjustments proposed in the original House Bill 4076 to keep the 5% and 7% as they are in the current law. The original House Bill 4076 retained the 5% and increased the 7 to 7.3. But you can see on line 3 of the amendment, they delete the 9.6% that was contained in House Bill 4076 and replace that with a 9.5%. So you've got a 5, 7, 9.5% bracket under the A13. The corporate change that was in House Bill 4076, increasing the corporate income tax rate to 6.93%, is unaffected by this amendment. It also maintains a three-year temporary increase through the 2004 tax year. The other component of the amendment is on Section 11. It does submit the proposal to a special election. Again, House Bill 4076 had a general election general election referral in it. On the revenue impact, we estimate that as a result of the lower rates than were proposed in the original 4076, that the revenue impact is $303 million, the L103, the biennium for personal income tax collection. Again, this is the L2 tax year plus a portion of L03. A 12.1% on corporate for a net increase of 315.1. The measure would carry on, temporary rate increase would carry on through the 04 tax year, and we estimate would generate $413.2 million in the 03-05 biennium. We've also distributed to our tax calculator simulation model what the effects would be on the different income classes, and you should have that as well. It shows an average increase on all returns on the personal income tax of $114 in the 02 tax year. That is adjusted, that is after adjustment for federal offset.
Thank you. You can get into this in the work session. If the committee has any questions for staff. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in attendance that would like to testify on behalf or in opposition to House Bill 4076? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 4076.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ferry.
Thank you. I would make a proposed for discussion the conceptual amendment to Section 11 of the Dash 13 amendments. On lines 9 and 10 of page 3, that's in Section 11, it refers to a special election held as provided in chapter blank, and that leaves the date to be set in the election bill. I think my preference to get this question straight away would be, and I've spoken to the Legislative Council about that, and I think the most effective way to do that would be to, on line 9, where it says, throughout this state, delete the remainder of that sentence and insert on December 10, 2002, or December 17. I'm open to whatever the committee's sense is as to that, but I think it would be helpful for the full discussion of this bill to have the date actually set in this bill.
I would agree. Does the committee have a...
May I ask a question?
Of course.
Just for personal clarification, if we left the section 11 to read what it reads now, what would be the date that would result from that?
And Mr. Chair, that date would remain to be determined, because that date hasn't been set until we adopt House Bill 4075. So I'm just saying, to put the date in here, we resolve that question, and we don't defer the question to some later consideration of House Bill 4075. So there is no date. There would be no date. If we just adopt it as it is, there is no date for this election until we go back and adopt House Bill 4075 and put a date into that bill.
But either way, it works.
Either way it does, but this certifies it in this bill. This is what the parameters of the debate.
We're going to make a decision. Let's make the decision now.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Of course.
For how long? Oh, 20 seconds. Reconvene after that unofficial recess, as opposed to an official recess. Perhaps Representative Devlin could give us the definition of the distinction.
This was an unofficial 20-second recess that lasted about 90 seconds. Sometimes an official recess is supposed to be for 10 minutes and a half hour.
Good job, sir. Representative
Mr. Chair, I'm informed that is it lines 4 and 5?
Yes.
Establishes as a 2-year tax increase in these amendments. I think we've been talking about 2 years. I don't. In our discussion around the building, it's been 3 years. I don't want to. So I think we need to conceptually amend. Line 4 to change 2000. Oh, we delete those two lines, Dr. Shea. We just delete lines 4 and 5.
And what page are you on?
Page 3, lines 4 and 5
of the amendment. Of the dash 13. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I'll start with that one. Then I would move that we conceptually amend House Bill, the dash 13 amendments to House Bill 4076 by deleting lines 4 and 5 on page 3.
Representative Fetterly has moved we conceptually amend the dash 13 amendments on page 3, lines 4 and 5 by deleting them. Any discussion? Any objections? Let the record show Representative Hayden objects. Let the record show Representative Westland objects. Seeing no other objections, motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the dash 13 amendments be further conceptually amended by deleting the language on line 9 of page 3, beginning with the word as provided.
Where are you?
I'm on page 3, line 9.
Right.
The motion would be to delete the language beginning with as provided through the end of the sentence.
Okay.
And insert in place of that language on December, help me out.
Don't look at that.
For purposes. Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Yeah. 10th of the 17th. I would suggest 10th.
Fine. My motion. Then it's been inserted December 10, 2002.
The 7th is still out, Mr. Chairman.
The 7th is still out.
Well, it's on the calendar and in the Mayan calculation of everything, but it is out for purposes of this discussion. Representative, that is in motion?
That is in motion.
Representative Federley has moved that the dash 13 on page 3, line 9, be amended to read that the election will take place on the 10th of December. 2002. Any discussion? Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, thank you. There is a honest and at times appropriate disagreement on the date of this election. This is a time that good people can honestly disagree. The difficulty with the 10th and the advantage of 10th, I think, are pretty well known. The advantage is we don't have to have difficulty with the tax brackets and laws after the first, it's not a retroactive tax. And I accept that as a reasonable argument. However, there are two arguments against that that I think outweigh those. One is that we believe that the date before the first year makes it almost impossible to get this passed to the polls. We do not have time for those who are in favor of this bill to have an opportunity to have a conversation with the voters of Oregon in a way that has a chance for this bill to pass. We need more time for that. It's going to be a very expensive conversation, and we believe, until February 10th to get that conversation going. Secondly, it's going to be very difficult because of those concerns to get enough votes in our caucus to get this bill out and successfully pass it. We need time also to talk to our caucus about a delayed time of February 10th time to see if we can raise the votes necessary to make this bill successful. Those are two major concerns we have. I want to register those now and understand them. And we also understand your position, which is valid. I wish this whole thing was taking place 3 months ago so we could back time up and fix it, but we can't do that now. And so we feel these two salient facts outweigh the chaos that may occur if this passes after the first year, and I accept that and I understand that with you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm Mr. Chair.
Representative, I do appreciate those comments very much. You correctly point out the logistics and the disruption to the tax filing process. I think those are very legitimate concerns. With regard to your arguments in favor of putting it to a later date, January, February, I understand those. I guess I'm perplexed by those because in conversations with your leadership, members of the governor's office, you know, everyone seemed pretty much on board to get this thing to a November election, which we regrettably passed, could not get to an accommodation agreement by that time. So, I mean, that's a weak difference. In terms of whether we came to an agreement or not. So it would have left about the same amount of time for a conversation with the voters of Oregon. I just don't see that as a salient reason
for moving at this point in time. I mean, either it's going to pass or it's going to fail at the polls. A question of campaigns is largely determined, by a voter's willingness to receive the message. And either the Oregon voters are willing to receive this message or they aren't. I think it can pass or fail based on the mood of the Oregon voters, not by a protracted campaign. But with regard to your point of being able to get more votes in caucus, I speak for myself and only for myself, but I would be willing to entertain that motion if you can show me the vote count that gets this thing passed. If you can, great.
Mr. Chairman.
If you can't, there's no reason to move it.
Just on that point, I think it's fair to put on the record that in the whirlwind of discussions over the past day and a half on this, and even leading up to that, December has always been the date discussed, at least as far as the date for the referral that we have been advancing, I say always, in the last couple of days. And so I think there certainly has been time to give consideration to that date and to coalesce either support or non-support around that date or some other date. And I agree with Representative Bates. This is an issue on which reasonable minds can disagree. My preference for the December date is simply a matter of practicalities, feeling that since we are asking the voters to consider a change in the tax rates for the 2002 calendar year, that it only makes sense to get that question out and answered in 2002, and that there's no reason for us to add to the confusion around this whole thing by deferring the question until 2003 with some of the potential problems then that would befall us that were testified to by Susan Browning the other day in terms of tax forms, tax returns, republication of those, notice to taxpayers, and all that would follow from there. I think it is cleaner to get the question answered. I do understand, I've heard that December is a bad month for a tax vote, and I don't mean to be facetious when I say I don't think there is a good month for a tax vote. I think it's probably about as good as any, and you can play this with all of the variables that go into it and make as good a case for this date, I believe, as you can for any other date.
Representative Hayden. Mr. Speaker, it occurs to me that many Western democracies run their entire general elections in a matter of weeks, where we have the potential of almost 3 months to make our case in this case. Also, here in our own state, we have a March filing deadline for candidates and a May election, which gives 60 days for many candidates to make their case. And I think the case can be made between now and December the 10th. If we delay until a February election, Revenue testified that they would essentially impound the refunds from the early filers and keep those monies until the forms have been printed. So you would have cash flow problems with money coming in. You would have refund problems with money flowing out. I think it's much cleaner to keep the 2002 problem as in the 2002 tax year.
Yeah, I think those are very salient comments, Representative. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's been pretty clear from our discussions here over the last, 11 or 12 days, that there's still considerable disagreement in this building over whether a revenue increase is needed or not needed, whether if there is a revenue increase needed, whether it should be by enactment or by referral. But I think the best we can hope here from this going forward, if it goes forward like this, is that we make a commitment to continue discussion, because I think we will still be here discussing this for a while. I think also, and this is the political side of this, maybe not the policy side of this, understand that we don't know at this juncture what the December forecast is going to bring us. And that will actually become public about 11 days before this election day. And we're all hopeful or praying that it isn't too bad a forecast, both for the issues of being able to perform the functions that the public expects the state to perform in terms of public safety and human services, but also because we don't want to see it go down any further, because that's a clear signal that our economy is not doing very well either, and more people are in trouble. So I'm willing to actually give a courtesy vote for this amendment, but knowing that I may be voting on another amendment here sometime in the near future.
Quite frankly, I would hope you would be voting on another amendment here in the near future. The depending on how precisely you want to talk about the news that the December forecast is going to bring us, if you want to put it in just two categories, good or bad, I think we're all pretty much
dead even.
That would be good.
Or neutral.
Not plus or the third. The look, I mean, this comes down to trying to get this done. And many people on both sides of the aisle have worked extraordinarily hard to try to come up with a solution that produces the constitutional, you know, required votes. Nobody has worked harder than the Speaker. The hours he has put in here are just inhuman. And so if there is a real opportunity to change this bill that makes a difference, then I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I have every confidence that he would be very open to entertaining that amendment. But it has to be real, it has to be solid, and it, you know, if that's time for playing games and delay. And we're going ahead. If something changes between now and the floor vote, I would be very hopeful of that.
Mr. Chairman, I just can't let playing games and delay go without some comment. There are lots of people in this building that are working very hard to try to get a reasonable solution for Oregonians, and they're doing it honestly and in good faith. And I agree with my colleagues when they say there can be a true difference of opinion about trying to guarantee the largest potential for success. I couldn't let that go with that comment.
Well, if I can respond, we've been here for 10 days, 11 days, and we've had many false starts. And I agree, Representative. People on both sides of the aisle have been working incredibly hard to make this happen. And I agree that we should give it every chance of success. And we are giving it every chance of success. And from what I hear you guys saying, you know, your caucus has a problem with the state. Some members in our caucus have a problem with the federal state or January state. So if we're going to change it, let's make sure it's real, and then it's going to pass.
Mr.
If we can't, then there's no reason to change.
I would very much just to move along with this process. I think that my colleagues on the other side of the table here are very anxious to get back to their caucus and have a discussion, and we need to be moving this process along.
Thank you, Representative Bates.
Mr. Chair, my purpose of bringing this discussion up was to try to keep the dialogue going. Notwithstanding the Oregonian mistaking a bald head for a cool head, I would like to move forward with this conversation with our caucus with the possibility of bringing more votes to this. I will give a courtesy vote to the amendment as suggested by Representative Shetterly. I understand I might change that vote later, but that allows us, having had this discussion, to take it back to our caucus in the hopes of bringing more votes. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Representative. There is a motion before us. Representative Shetterly has moved that we insert the election date to be December 10, 2002. Any further discussion? Any objections?
I'm not objecting. I will be joining my colleagues for precisely the same reason and advancing this today, but reserving the right to vote differently.
I appreciate that, Representative. Seeing no objections, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
If there are no further amendments, and I'm not aware of any, I would move House Bill 476 as amended by the dash 3s as we have conceptually amended, dash 13s rather, as we have conceptually amended them to the floor of the HUCAS recommendation.
Representative Shetterly has moved House Bill 4076 as amended in the dash 3s and conceptually, or the dash 13s, and as conceptually amended by removing lines 4 and 5 on page 3 and by inserting an election date of December 10, 2002 on page 3 to the floor of the House of Representatives with a two-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I would like the record to reflect that my vote is a courtesy vote.
Is that a courtesy no or a courtesy yes?
Courtesy yes. I will be a courtesy yes.
Let the record reflect that Representative Morgan's, Westland's, and Bates' vote is a courtesy yes. Any objections? Representative Hayden is a no, seeing no other objections, House Bill 4076, as amended, is moved before House Representatives to refute that recommendation. So ordered. We will recess.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a comment here for the record before we conclude.
Speaker Simmons.
That there has been considerable discussion about potential dates for elections, and that even on this committee, there's a division as to when that ought to appropriately be. I do know and have it on good information that the members in our caucus who have been willing to move this process forward through this negotiation, the support there evaporates if the date gets pushed into next year. So that is not a point that I can negotiate on. And I think this bill that we have before us is the opportunity to ask people of Oregon whether or not they think the tax increase is appropriate at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Seeing no other business coming before the committee, we will recess the committee until the call of the chair. For your recess. We will call the House Special Session Committee on Budget Restoration to order, and we will open a work session on House Bill 4073. Mr. Yates.
A number of amendments have been issued, and these have basically all been rolled into the Dash 9 amendments that you have before you now. And conveniently, this basically replaces the existing bill, and so you don't have to refer back and forth between the amendments and the bill. It's all in the amendment. Basically, what's changed here from the last time we talked about this is the amount. And we're now authorizing, still pledging the same revenue stream, which is the master settlement payments, or the master settlement asset, which is 77%. Of the payments they will receive under the master settlement payment. And allowing the directing the corporation, essentially the treasurer and VAT, to determine a security structure that will allow them to provide the state with $400 million in net proceeds. The $400 million is passed to VAT and then directly into the school fund. And it's written so that if they are grants to the school fund, and that preserves the tax, the exemption from federal tax, so they are tax-exempt bonds. And the result is an interest rate of about 4.6%, somewhat higher because of the higher amount and the extension of the time it will take to pay back that amount. These are estimated to pay back, I think, by about 2012 to pay off. So we have a maturity date here, which I need to find and have a look at this up. Correction. The bond, you know, that can be issued with maturity not to exceed 14 years.
Yeah. Mr. Chair?
Representative Chatterley.
Thank you. But these are turbo bonds, and so we have an actual term of what is still 10 years?
The expected payout is, as I said, around 2012, 2013. The maturity that the maximum would take the maturity to 2015, 2016.
And also one of the questions. You referred to interest rate 4.3. I'm trying to think back to the sheet that we saw from Treasury last time we looked at this. And as I recall, that equivalent number was called cost of funds. Is that what it's called? And that includes issuance costs as well as the capitalized interest. So it's not just interest at that 4.6, but that also includes all of the issuance costs as well.
Issuance costs and finance costs, which is your capitalized interest,
yeah,
and those things, are increase the total gross premium or gross proceeds of bonds,
right,
and they're paid out of the excess of gross proceeds of the net proceeds. The debt service, which has to be paid, I think it's basically semi-annually, comes out of and is determined by the rate of interest. We were talking about 3.8% before, 3.87 for $250 million, I think it was, $200 million. And now this goes up to about 4.6% when you're raising $400 million in net proceeds.
And the time is extended.
The time is extended, and that's primarily the reason why the rate interest rate is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Devil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Yates, you mentioned earlier, and I just wanted to get it. Is it 77% of the proceeds? What was the figure?
That's the estimate that we're working with, yes.
And just a clarification, just my own information, is obviously you're reserving for the OHSU commitment, the remainder. How long does that commitment last? Is it?
They're 20-year bonds. They just, some of them have been issued. They're not issued.
Okay.
So it continues through this period beyond.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Just one. Yeah. Last time we were here, Treasury had a, Chuck, you had a nice sheet that had the nominal amount and the cost of issuance and the capitalized interest and all of that set out in very readable and straightforward form. Do we have anything like that from Treasury, or can we get something maybe before the bill goes before? That was very helpful in understanding the aspects of this vehicle. That'd be helpful.
Chuck, would you like to come forward? Any of the finer points?
For the record, Kate Richardson, or Kate Treasury. I guess you're looking at, I believe, at the dash 9. And as Steph has told you, the 14 years is an outside maturity date, a stated maturity date, and these would be approximately 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And our calculations, and again, these are estimations. These are very complicated calculations, and we have not had them run in New York at this number exactly. We've done it at other numbers and have approximated. And on the cost of funds, your estimation was?
For the record, it's Chuck Smith with the Oregon State Treasury. It's 4.86%, or it could be 4.76 in today's current market. So it's right there.
And as far, Mr. Chair, Representative, and as far as your question regarding a sheet, is that for distribution or for the carrier of the bill?
Mr. Chair, I thought it was straightforward enough that I thought the distribution would be very helpful. But if you can't get it, that came out of New York and you just can't get it, I understand.
Mr. Chair, I think we can put together a summary. That was good.
That would be good for the desk.
Mr. Chair, if I may, sir, I've asked you to add one piece to this.
Of course.
And I will say that the Treasurer is disappointed at the failure of the tax bill on the floor, and although we can structure this deal and it can move forward, he is concerned about how this does not address the structural deficit in the next session, and is just sending a cautionary note that the bond rating company, as Moody's has recently stated in their outlook, are very concerned about the next budget cycle and its impact. So although we believe that the rating companies understand the one-shot deal here, they will be watching this very closely.
Well, I think this is obviously based on the order of today's agenda, this is a second choice
the anything else you want to add, Chuck? Don't have to. Welcome to.
Yes, sir.
Any questions, Representative Bates?
Mr. Chair, I apologize for being pulled out of the room there for a moment. I may have missed the answer to these questions, but I want to ask them quickly if I'm being repetitive to stop me. Do we have a figure of the actual cost and interest, what you call cost of funds for $400 million? Do we have a figure for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I don't have it in a dollar amount. I can tell you from an estimate would be 4.86%. That's probably a conservative estimate in today's market, perhaps a little less. That would be the cost of funds.
You're looking for a total dollar amount.
Total dollar amount, interest paid over the ensuing 10 years of this, what that interest paid would be, not just the cost of making the note, which is 1 or 2 percentage points, but what the expected interest that will be paid on this over the next 10 years is.
Well, Representative Bates, it's going to be approximately $60.6 million a year, but that's going to include principal payments and interest, and unfortunately, I don't have the interest broken out from the principal at this moment.
Mr. Chair, that did answer my second question, what the annual payment would be. Mm-hmm. And at some time in the future, if we could see what that was as far as interest is concerned, it'd be better than you see. Well, I could probably multiply by 10 divided. If 10 years of $600 million, $400 is principal, so we're talking about $200 million roughly in interest payment.
Mr. Yates, I think
I sort of run through an estimate of trying to get ready for the new tax. And I used a slightly lower rate of interest, 4.6. That is about $124 million.
Okay, more. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to ask those things. I think we're all disappointed what just transpired on the floor. I still wish we could get back to fix that one, maybe with a compromise, but we have to work this one now. I need to let you know that we'll be asking the governor to probably veto this package if it gets to his desk. I mean, it's a big surprise for anybody, but I want to get that on the record.
Well, all I know is the governor sat right in the chair with Kate Wickerson, the city said he'd sign it, or would not veto it. Be precise.
I believe
that's all you want.
I believe that was the context of the full package.
We've got the date.
This is my second choice. I mean, this.
I agree.
I cannot tell you how disappointed I am today's earlier outcome, but I'm not here to debate that. Yeah, any other questions? Well, Representative Shetterly?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 9 amendment into House Bill 4073.
Representative Shetterly has moved the Dash 9 amendment into House Bill 4073. Any discussion? Any objections? Let the record show Representative Bates objects. Any other objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Shetterly has moved House Bill 4073 as amended by the Dash 9 to the floor of the House of Representatives with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? With the record show, Representative Bates objects. Any other objections? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll close the work session on House Bill 4073. Take a slight recess. Get restoration. Hopefully the tapes are on and going out over the building. We will wait a few minutes for our colleagues from across the aisle to join us. And until they do, we will be in recess again. We will open a work session on House Bill 4074. Dallas?
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have two amendments for consideration. You have both of them there, the Dash 83 and the Dash 84. I can explain the Dash 83. We have Mr. Britton from our office answering questions on the Dash 84. the dash 83 potentially eliminate that part of the bill that would reduce the cap of the distribution of lottery funds to county fairs. Originally, we had amended it to be consistent with reductions that were taken in the present package, so there'd be no roll-up. This would eliminate that reduction so that the existing 1% of lottery up to 1.5 million in distribution of county fairs would still be in the statute. This takes out that reduction. That's the dash 83 amendment.
For the benefit of those in attendance, this is the House Appropriations Bill. We have worked this bill once before. This is a bill that was just referred back from the floor. This is a program adjustment bill. This bill has been referred back. So all we're doing is putting some amendments in it. I'm hopeful every time that door opens that the other members of our committee are joining us. Car 54, where are you? And I'll wait a few minutes just to see if they show up. We'll take another recess. For those of you in attendance, I will say that Dallas has just described the A3 to House Bill 4074, which functionally puts the county fair funding back in the program adjustment bill. If you could explain the dash 4.
Sure. The A4 amendment merely directs the Department of Human Services to distribute $1.2 million in equal proportions to safety net clinics that are not federally qualified health centers, and directs the department to distribute all the monies required to be distributed under this section by January 1, 2003. It provides no additional appropriation. This is money that's already appropriated to the department. It really directs the distribution of $1.2 million to the safety net clinics that are not federally qualified health centers.
Any questions? Representative Johnson.
I do have a question. In fact, I probably have a whole bunch of questions. I understand the A4, but let's focus for a second on the A3. Having participated in the negotiations that went through some very, very, very difficult cuts, I know that there are a lot of well-beloved Oregon programs that ended up on the cutting room floor. Old friends that have been funded by this body for a long time, including the Historical Society that is a repository for the artifacts in Oregon, at some cost to keep those artifacts properly curated. OPD, which provides the opportunity for cultural programming in eastern and central Oregon where it doesn't exist. Funds to build clean water and sewer in communities. Those all remain unrestored. And I'm struggling, as hard as I work to get money for county fairs and work on a companion bill, why is it when we're not providing clean water and clean sewer and we're cutting police officers, are we making a case to refund county fairs?
Are you asking anyone in particular?
No, it's just a rhetorical question.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussions? Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 3s and the dash 4s into House Bill 4074.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. Representative Morgan has moved the dash 3 and dash 4 amendments into House Bill 4074. Any further discussion?
Are we doing this as a package?
Sure. Any questions? Any objections to amending 4074? Let the record show that Representative Johnson and Representative Bates object.
Not out of objection, if I can qualify this, Mr. Chair, not out of objection for the purposes, but out of objection to the underlying policy that is restoring a couple of programs when we have left other beloved programs unfunded.
And I would like to reiterate that to the Mr. Chair. The funding of the paycheck claims is obviously essential services. Some of the other I do not believe to be the case. And we've kind of lost our way here as far as setting priorities.
Thank you, Representative. Let the record show that Representative Bates and Representative Johnson object. Seeing no other objections, House Bill 4074 is so amended.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move House Bill 4074 as amended to the floor with the DPAS recommendation.
Representative Morgan has moved House Bill 4074 as amended by the A3s and A4s to the floor of the House of Representatives with the DPAS recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Let the record show Representative Johnson objects, seeing no other. Let the record show Representative Bates also objects, seeing no other objection. House Bill 4074, as amended, is moved to the floor of House Representatives with a DPAS recommendation. Representative Hayden is the carrier. We will close the work session on House Bill 4074. Recess until we get the amendments to House Bill 5100, which I think is 15, 20 minutes or so.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the fact that when you're doing surgery and amputating limbs, to do it quickly and efficiently is the best way. Thank you. It's less painful.
Oh, it's
maybe on a progressive, maybe.
You do it, trust me, but go slowly. It's more painful. Get it done.
And open a work session on bill introduction. We will introduce LC 25. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the word. We will close the bill introduction on we will close the work session on bill introduction. Open the work session on House Bill 5100.
Where the work session is
program.
We will recess the committee. Reconvene the House Special Session Committee on Budget Restoration. We are in a work session on House Bill 5100. Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Chair, members, you have before you the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 5100. House Bill 5100 is the disappropriation bill that will be used in this session budget rebalance plan. The overall plan now has identified reductions of about $47 million, an across-the-board reduction of about $40 million without K-12 taking the state school fund taking a share of that $40 million. And there's a restoration of selected cuts that resulted from third special session actions of about $4.5 million. This results in a total of about $82 million in budget rebalance actions, which when you combine that with the $400 million in new revenue from the action you took in House Bill 4073, you have a rebalanced budget. Section 1 of the amendments reflects the combined selective cuts and across-the-board cuts, and they're listed in the bill by agency and appropriation line. Section 2, which starts on page 19, adds back a total of $4.5 million to selected programs that received a disproportionate share of the third special session action that reduced $100 million in salary, money available for state employee salaries to $77
million. Mr. Ruffo, I just want to make absolutely sure that I understand. You started in Section 2 on page 19.
That's correct.
You are beginning to describe then salary adjustments that were added back in as a result of the actions taken in the third special session that now are being addressed in the fifth special session in this bill?
That's correct.
Okay.
I provided you two items besides the amendments. The first is the selective cut list, which has been modified from previous versions that have been appeared in the building. The changes that you'll see are shaded in the far right column. Generally, these changes were made to reduce unspecified cuts that, of a certain percentage that were made to agencies and programs in order to focus the cuts more on the targeted side. The reason for that was the unspecified cuts were taken in areas that when the budget was when the amount needed to rebalance the budget from cuts was $282 million, we went further into programs for cuts. When that amount was changed down to $82 million, these unspecified cuts were backed out so that agencies in those lines would only take their prorated share of the $40 million across the board reduction instead of having double hit taken. One other change is in the line for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, where the other funds amount was increased so that other funds can be transferred to maintain hatchery operations even at the $40 million across the board cut that the department would take its share of that $40 million. And then the final handout is a description by agency that does not exactly match to the bill. This was just provided to give you a rough idea of the effect of a $40 million cut to state agencies with K-12 being held behind them.
One more clarifying question. Okay. So, Mr. Rocco, I just want to make sure that I understand you. I'm going to go to the first page of the last handout, where you have, for example, I'm just going to pick OHSU. Its $40 million reduction is cited at $21,000, and yet it takes a specific reduction of MUPL money in the table that precedes that.
That's correct.
And help me understand why.
The second handout that lists by agency is general fund only, and MUPL would not be included in that general fund category.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Representative Ketterer.
Hey, this is the first chance I've had to look at this, and I'm not going to get in the way of it over here. I know things are moving, but I want to signal something at least for some support for consideration in the Senate when it gets there. I'm looking at judiciary on the judicial department on the $40 million reduction. And I guess what troubles me is that these across-the-board reductions are taken from the end of Special Session 3 remaining general fund balance, and it does not take into account the the disproportionate, the grossly disproportionate path that the Judicial Department took getting to the end of Section 3, and so I think it exacerbates the cuts that they were assigned in the first three sessions, and then basically penalizes the Judicial Department for having taken its greater than proportionate share in those sessions, because now it loses proportionally with other departments and programs. So I'm not going to get in the way of this, but I will certainly do what I can to make some fix on this on the Senate side, because I think that does treat the Judicial Department particularly unfairly, having taken the out-of-proportionate share of cuts that it took in the first three sessions.
Representative Federley, I appreciate that comment. I know LFO has worked very hard under very onerous circumstances and has received direction from leadership to do just exactly this. I will allow this is the first time I have seen this document as well. I am concerned. I mean, you know, the bottom line, folks, is that the all of us worked very hard to just pass a tax bill that would have resulted in at least the opportunity for revenue to come back, not only to the judicial but others, and the very significant across-the-board cuts. This bill, on the other hand, does not allow that opportunity, and until this body is willing to either face up to some of the revenue issues or include K-12 and the health plan in the reductions that are being made, then vital services, in fact, in this case, as Representative Federley alludes, the judiciary branch, which has already taken, I think I'm correct when I say this, the largest percentage general fund reduction, are going to continue to suffer. And I, for one, am very disturbed by this. I appreciate your sentiment for not standing in the way. It's a vague comment as to where I am.
Any other questions?
Chair? Having just seen this talk for the first time, I'm trying to compare it to the previous one we worked on, and it was 72, 62, 50 million, 46 million cuts. And I just haven't got time to walk through all that, but I think Ken, you've kind of explained it to us with the extra cuts. We're walking down to 46. But I also hear you say, though, in order to balance the budget, we're looking at 400 million in bonding. This is 46. And you said there's another 40 million in across the board cuts within this appropriation bill?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. You'll see about 47 million in targeted cuts, and then there's a 40 million in addition across the board without K-12 included.
The follow up question, Mr. Chair?
Of course.
And that 40 million, I assume, would be spread in programs with federal match money involved in it?
That's correct.
And do you have any idea how much federal match money we'll be losing in DHS programs and other programs if they do the 40 million across the board cuts?
Not immediately, but we could get that information.
Is it the neighborhood of $60 million, would you guess?
The DHS total cut under the 40 million would be about $16 million.
16 or 60?
16.
16 million.
General fund. And not all of that is math, but Mr. Griffin may be able to.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bates, it depends on how those $40 million or DHS's share of the $40 million are actually implemented by the agency. And if they're taken from, say, Medicaid, you're right, you're looking at a 40-60 match. If they're taken from primarily general funded programs only, obviously the federal funds loss would be much less. The truth of the matter is we don't know what those cuts specifically would be.
And question again, would the agencies have the ability to take more out of Oregon Project Independence if they wish, since it's not matched funds and shift them otherwise to other area?
Mr. Chair, I didn't identify myself. Right. John Britton from the Legislative Fiscal Office. And Representative Bates, that would be an option for the agency to do, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, as usual, the devils are in the details, and we haven't got a chance for time to look at the details here right now. Mr. Chair, I know we want to move these things before tonight. We want to get things done. I'm going to follow Representative Shedley's
position of not staying away of this and giving courtesy votes, and with understanding and hope that we'll have more time to look at this on the Senate side before it comes back to us, if in fact it does. But I'm very concerned that we're rushing the bill through tonight. We have that chance, which is a very detailed, difficult look at, and which I believe we've lost our way to a certain degree as far as deciding what is optimal to fund and what is not optimal to fund. I just want to register that for the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Mr. Rosso. Where within the bill itself is the controlling language regarding the $40 million across the board cut?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, by controlling language, do you mean
where does it say $40 million across the board cut?
It does not specifically say that. It's just the end result of the calculation of the various disappropriations that we've seen.
Thank you. Just one other question, Mr. Ruffo. I recall when we were going through this tough competition of trying to look at all of these programs, in some cases my memory, because I don't have the two to compare, just the way Dr. Bates talked about one to another, where there's just a little dash in the special session five reductions, you would have marked those in gray if it had differed from the agreements that the reduction committee made, would you not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that's correct. The only things that were changed by marking grace was, for example, on page 2, long-term care and budget, previously had a $30,000 900 reduction, but now it is zero in this part, but they will receive a share of the $40 million across the board cut in lieu of that. But if you look down the third line where it says eliminate balance of safety net clinic funding, that was never in the previous version that you have seen. There was no cut to that because it's not stated.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 5 amendment into House Bill 5100.
Representative Morgan has moved the Dash 5 amendment into House Bill 5100. Any discussion?
Give it a courtesy vote, yes.
That's the... Any objections?
No, I'm sorry.
Courtesy vote. Let the record show, is that an objection or a comment?
Mr. Chairman, this is a vote of no in committee, which may change by the time it gets to the floor.
Let the record show, Representative Devlin is voting no.
Might be yes in committee, but may change to no.
Mine's a yes in committee, but it may be on the floor. any other objections? Seeing none. The Dash 5 are put into House Bill 5100. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5100 as amended by the Dash 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Morgan has moved House Bill 5100 as amended by the Dash 5 to the floor of the House Representatives with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none.
Great, great.
The courtesy, yes. Seeing no objections, so ordered. We will recess the House Special Session Committee on Budget Restoration.